The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Money FM 89.3, the best of your money. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
Hey, welcome to Money and Me. I'm Michelle Martin. A son tells his mother he will leave the house to her, but when he dies suddenly without a will, a descendant, long lost, countersues for the house and wins. A husband and a wife buy a property worth $1.5 million under a trust set up for their child in the hopes that the rental will help pay for his university education. But when the couple divorce, the question of who really owns this house is contested. And just last year, the Ministry of Finance announced that with effect from May the 9th of 2022, additional buyer stamp duty or ABSD of 35% will apply to any transfer of residential property into a living trust. And this was introduced to prevent the situation where people avoid paying for ABSD by buying the property in another's name instead of their own. Join me as we look at what you need to understand about your where your money is going when you buy property and put it in somebody else's name. Justin Chan is senior partner and head of dispute resolution practice at Tito Isaac and Company. Justin, good morning.
Morning.
Thanks good to see you again. Yes, Happy New Year.
In a minute. Happy New Year. Gong Hei Fat Choy. To you and all the listeners.
Thank you very much. This is valuable information that we're chatting about today. So we appreciate your time, Justin. Thanks for being here. So help us out with this whole idea of buying a property in trust. When does it make sense for anyone to do that?
Here's the thing. It's getting increasingly less sensible to do so. Because as you can see, there's been a rash of litigation on the situation where you've got the property and you put it in somebody else's name, but you paid everything for it. That's the common thing. So, and these are usually family arrangements. So when you want to do this, you've got to pick the person that you trust. That is the legal term. It is as well as the practical term. You must trust this person absolutely. Because what you need to know is that on paper, this house doesn't belong to you. It belongs to somebody else. And in cases like the one where the father sued the son, I think it was for a $1.5 million condo. I suspect there was actually something in writing, a trust deed. And what he tried to do was that he tried to unravel the trust deed by saying that his wife had unduly influenced or forced him into signing this document. So,
and the court decided he was not handpicked.
Yeah.
Amongst other things.
Yeah, I mean, it's the judge had to make a... See, that's the thing. When you get to court and it's a family situation, the judge has to make an educated guess, right? The judge doesn't know you, doesn't know your wife, doesn't know the son. So all of that must be sort of explained to him and demonstrated to him that there was actually this agreement. So the judge often has to rely on... In the cases I've done, they often have to rely on two things. One is called legal presumptions, where if certain circumstances arise, then I'm allowed to sort of find that these are consistent actions. For example, if the father, for example, paid everything for this property, there's what is known as the presumption of resulting trust, which means that the person who paid all probably owns all. Probably.
And are there any differences in this probably owns everything component? If we're talking about buying a trust and buying an HDB flat under the trust structure versus buying a private property under the trust structure?
Oh, it makes a world of difference, Michelle. Mm-hmm. The HDB Act does not allow for express trust to be created over their apartments. And this is something which can go, a lot of ink has been spilled on this, in writing judgments. But at the end of the day, if you have created an express trust, meaning I buy this in your name, it's not enforceable. The trust is not enforceable. So the person that you put the flat's name in or the apartment's name in is actually the owner in the eyes of the HDB.
Wow. Versus private property when it is enforceable. Is that right?
Yes. It is enforceable, private property. Of course, somebody can say that that agreement that we had or that trust agreement that we had is void. For example, that guy said, is void because I was forced into signing it by my wife.
Wow.
So there are no guarantees, but I would say that the stronger case for you is that if you, for residential property, put it into writing. Tell your conveyancing lawyer, the person who completes the purchase of the property for you, that trust property. He'll know what to do.
Okay, let's go through some scenarios because it always helps us with the legalese to understand it in context. So if a husband and a wife both put money in their house to buy a house, it's a private house, the house is in his name. Should they divorce, is the house then wholly his?
Okay, there's a slight difference here between divorce cases and sort of like your run of civil cases. Civil cases meaning we decide fairness in between citizens of the country, for example. In matrimonial law, which is its own sort of legal creature, legal environment, the court will look at anything that's purchased during the tenure of the marriage. Anything purchased after you guys got married is considered matrimonial property and up for division. And that division does not need to tie in exactly with what percentage you have put the house in. For example, sometimes husband and wife say 70-30, tenants in common, right? Or in your situation, it's in the husband's sole name. That is still matrimonial property up for division. The wife can still lay some claim to it. The percentage, we don't know because the court has to weigh up the direct financial contributions of either party and also the indirect financial contributions of either party. So indirect financial contribution means, you know, how I've supported my husband, how I've looked after the children, you know, have I improved his business by being, let's say, the PR manager? You know, all of these things would come into play. So it's really context. So if it's in the context of a divorce, there will be that sort of analysis. If it's in the context of, let's say, private individuals suing each other, father suing son, you know, it's a bit different.
Okay, so because it's matrimonial law, even if on the housing deed you had decided when you both signed it that it was going to be 30-70 in favor of the wife, during a divorce, anything can happen. That 30-70 division can change?
Yeah, it would change. It would change in a divorce. Like I said, even in a situation where the husband owns the flat, the property outright, 100% owner, that is still considered matrimonial property up for division. So you could arrive at 50-50, right? You know, for like a long marriage, sometimes that's where you end up.
All right, we are talking about what happens when you put money in buying a house and then you don't put it in your own name. It's in somebody else's name. In one of the cases that I was talking about, I think the grandmother sued and said her son had told her before his untimely death that he was going to pass the house to her. And then along comes this the son, her grandson, and contests and wins because he didn't have a will. So, you know, interstate laws come into effect. So all these arrangements with loved ones are rarely in writing. How does one prove that my son told me this when we had dinner, that the house was mine, for example?
Oh, wow. You've asked $1 million question. I mean, that's something that both lawyers struggle to demonstrate and judges expect you to demonstrate to them, because it's a family, you know, not everything is put into writing. So a lot of the time you've heard me use the word presumption, right? There are certain presumptions that come into play. For example, if I'm the father and I put it in the son's name, I paid for everything, as a presumption that it's mine. But going in the opposite direction, right? The son can say there's a presumption of advancement, that's what they call it, which means dad meant this as a gift to me. There are certain categories where the presumption holds quite strongly. One is father to son, husband to wife, right? So if...
When you say father to son, it means it's father to son and father to daughter as well?
I'm sorry, father to sibs, to children.
Oh, okay. Oh, just checking.
Yeah. It's 2023. We're all equal. Like all the children are treated equal.
Okay, so if you say, I promise my son he can have my house when I die, but I've changed my mind. I'm the dad. I've told Junior this house is his when I die, but I've changed my mind. I want to sell my house now.
Yep.
What happens? The son contest the sale?
I'll start by saying in Singapore, you can sue everyone for anything. It's whether you win. So the son can sue, but I don't think the case is particularly strong. Because if the father is saying, I'm going to give this to you when I die, it doesn't speak to what happens when I'm alive, right?
Great point.
So, you know, when I'm alive, it should mean that I can do with it what I want. You know, only when I'm cold in my grave, yeah, sure, then your ownership sort of crystallizes at that point in time. There isn't a case exactly on point, but there's some sort of like tangential type arguments which lead me to believe that argument is a strong one.
All right. And finally, we come back to the husband and wife scenario, because over the years, when we do these shows on division of property, this question comes up a lot. So we thought we'd ask you, if the property is in the name of the husband and the wife, how exactly does the court decide on the percentage ownership of either party?
Okay, again, context is everything. So if it's in the context of a divorce, parties are a half filed for divorce and family law comes into effect, matrimonial law comes into effect, then it would go on those analysis that we talked about before, financial contribution, both direct and indirect. But there are outlier cases, and this is what shocks me, where husband has sued wife and they're not going to get divorced. They're suing it on like civil law principles. So husbands, they're not contemplating divorce. They have not
filed. Oh, I see. Okay. Right.
So actually, they're suing each other as private individuals, right? Unconnected by marriage. So there are cases, decided cases on that. But I'm thinking, how does that work in practice? You know, like that must slow down a lot of your life, you know? Honey, I have a headache because of the million questions that your lawyers are going to ask me tomorrow in court. You know what I mean? Like, how does that work?
That is a conundrum. That's a big one. So finally, Justin, before we let you go, what do you think anybody buying a house, putting down money and then putting it in another person's name needs to be aware of?
Okay. First things first, get the person that you trust. Absolutely. There are people that will throw you under the bus and there are people that will stand in front of the bus for you. Pick the people that stand in front of the bus. Number two, I've done this before. It makes sense when the family structure is not very cohesive, right? And I want to make this trust so I don't have to make it clear in the will, in my will, that my house is going to my son, for example, right? Because my son has been fighting with his sister, his older brother, his younger siblings for eternity. And I don't want to inflame those tensions. So I create sort of like a secret trust, naming him as the beneficiary. So that's one way it can happen. But these are usually large estates, you know, like tens of millions, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So create a will, decide who you want to pass it on to, so there's no doubt.
No, as in if you don't want to put in a will, because remember, a will has to be given to your next of kin at some stage. So you have this trust. So the moment you create a trust, you cannot will that property away, because when you create a trust, the interest in that, the land is technically owned by somebody else. You can only will away what you own.
Right.
So that is sort of like surgically dissected from your estate. That property that you want, that you made a trust for in favor of your son, now falls outside of the estate.
And all this comes under the ambit of a conveyancing lawyer. What kind of lawyer should I see to make sure that this trust is set up?
Okay. You should hire a lawyer. It doesn't need to be me. But you should hire a lawyer that has experience in family disputes. So, and that lawyer usually will work with a conveyancing lawyer to give you the full package, right? And they will come up with the trust deed, the conveyancing documents, you know, manner of holding. I think there is a fusion of like two disciplines here, litigation as well as conveyancing.
Useful, really useful advice. Thank you so much. As always, Justin Chan, Senior Partner and Head Dispute Resolution Practice at Tito Isaac and Company. Justin, have a great day ahead.
Same to you, Michelle. Cheers. Gong Yi Fa Choy. Gong Yi Fa Choy.
And to you.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.